Hi there, this is Angela Middleton and welcome to my podcast, I Want to BA, where I interview high flyers from all industries to find out their journey, how they came to do what they do, what it's like to do their job, and then their advice for listeners wanting to follow in their footsteps. In this series, we cover everything from traditional careers such as accountancy through to the less traditional careers and future industries such as digital marketing and digital publishing. David, thank you so much for joining us, and particularly because there is only 7 a.m. Because you're actually based in San Diego in California, but you don't have an American accent, and we're going to find out why, because you're going to tell us all about your journey. So if we could start by finding out where you went to school and just give us a rundown of your journey from school to, you know, working in your own business now in San Diego.
Okay, right. Okay, so it's quite a long story nowadays, but okay. You know, I grew up in Paddington in London. Great childhood, went to school in Paddington, and I was there till probably 11. And then we actually moved out to Middlesex, yeah. Where I went to school there. And school was a great social time for me. Always kind of struggled on the academic side. Enjoyed my time at school probably a little bit too much. There was always some outside interest that I had with football and so forth. And that kind of was the continuing theme, really, probably until I was 18 years old. I did a BTEC National, didn't do particularly well in that. So academia for me was always a challenge, far more interested in the social side of things, really.
And you're one of three boys, weren't you? And tell us what your mum and dad did.
Yeah, so I'm the younger one of three, one in the UK, one in the US. There's two now in the US, which is always tough for the parents. But yeah. I have a Spanish dad, a French mum, so both immigrants to the UK, and they're still in the UK now. And yeah, it was a great little family, really, in the sense that, you know, I lived in a council estate. It was very active, very sociable again. Mum and dad, mum worked a little bit, but her role really was to look after the three boys. And my dad, he was always a worker, really. He worked two jobs, factory worker by day and evening job, whether that be a bar, theatre, whatever it was, to make ends meet. So yeah. It was definitely a challenge for them kind of coming over to a different country and so forth and working hard. And actually, you know, they kind of moved us out of London from the council estate into to better surroundings, which obviously, looking back, was very much appreciated.
That work ethic obviously, you know, rubbed off on you because you had a lot of jobs while you were at school as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I always worked at a young age. Actually, most of my friends did as well, but particularly for me is that my mum and dad really didn't have the money to give me, really. So, you know, I had various jobs from 13. You know, at 13, I was jumping on the tube to London where I'd work in a theatre. You know, I did take people to their seats. I was a butcher boy. I worked at Sainsbury's where I, you know, filled up the milk area. So all these glamorous jobs that I did as a young person was to put some money in my pocket to socialize with my friends. It was, you know, do A to get B, and that kind of worked for me for certainly during the school years. It was great to have a bit of money in my pocket.
You know, looking back now, what sort of other things besides the money did you benefit from as a result of doing all those different jobs, do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you take those three roles, you've got, you know, theatre, right? So that is meeting and greeting people. I was 14 dealing with adults rushing to their seat, always late, always grumpy. So you got a real sense of how to deal with people in that role. Mm. You know, butcher boy was cleaning up disgusting things all day. So that was, you know, your humility was left at the door, right? You know, yeah. By the time you got home, you're in blood. And you've got to remember, this is for like all day for like £12. So for anyone listening, you know, you do what you can and what you need to do. Yeah. And then, you know, even putting the milk out, you know, that was a pretty degrading job because a lot of my friends and families were coming in all the day and they're on there putting the milk away. So you have to suck it up a little bit to get money and do jobs. And that's what I did, really, to make sure I could go out on a Friday evening with my pals.
And it gave you, as you say, those various different skills, which at the time, I guess, you didn't realise you're absorbing, but ultimately when you look back, you know, you have to learn to be punctual, professional, yeah. Polite, all these sorts of things, which obviously stand you in good stead in the future, don't they? So you were doing these jobs, you were enjoying school, but more the social side of it, not particularly the academic side. Why did you sort of not leave, you know, and not do A-levels? What made you sort of stay on at school and do, I think it was the BTEC you said, what made you stay on and do that?
Well, it was great. I wasn't someone who could actually get onto the A-level scheme, to be quite honest with you. The BTEC was an alternative option for me. Yeah. And excuse me. And I wasn't ready to kind of go into work at 16. I felt I needed to socialize a little bit longer. And that path was really easy to stay on for a couple more years. So I did it. It was an easy option for me, really.
So you finished your BTEC, and did you, obviously you then had to sort of get your first proper job. Did you know what it was you wanted to do, or, you know, what was the situation there?
Yeah, I mean, up until quite a late age, really, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. A lot of my friends were going off to university, and there was a few of us who really didn't know what we were going to do, really. So we took jobs. Actually, we all ended up in one insurance company. So it was kind of a bit of an extension of school, so to speak. But, that was a real sort of initial trigger point that actually other people are going off and doing stuff. And actually, looking back sort of emotionally, you think, gosh, these people are going to achieve more in life than I will. So it's really important to realize that, you know, life takes a long time. You don't have to get it all right at 18, but equally, you still need to be ready to work at a young age if you need to.
So you joined this insurance company, all your friends were working there. What were you doing there?
I was a data entry person. So I would get bank mandates and put thousands of them on a day. It was one of the most mind-numbing experiences of my life. But again, it was a means to an end, which was being my friend in the end of the week.
I know you then had a variety of different jobs, didn't you? So tell us a little bit more about how things progressed after that.
Yeah, so the next 2 years, I kind of jumped from job to job, actually. I had a few operations jobs where I would, you know, pack up parcels, put them in the van, they'd go off and logistically make sure orders were going out the door for various different companies. And that was life, really. It wasn't the most exciting thing.
I think some people, when they are sort of 20, 21, they feel that, you know, they really do need to sort of make a decision and get their life into gear, etc. But really, it's what we see is that people do experiment in so many different types of careers, and it's not until later, once they start to decide what they don't like, that's just as important as what they do like. So you had a sort of a turning point when you decided to go and travel to the US for the first time, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was actually, it's quite an unusual one, because my girlfriend at the time, she actually said to me that she wanted to go to the US and stay with my family for 3 months.
Yeah.
And at that point I was working and I wasn't going to go. And actually I thought, well, what have I got here? So we actually both went to the US. We went to Kansas and we actually babysitted for 3 months and done some traveling.
Yeah.
And again, I have to confess, I wasn't overly thinking about what I'm going to do when I get back. Knew that I'd go back into a similar environment, but wanted to enjoy my time while I was there. So that's what we did.
And so you were there, and then how long were you there for?
So I was there for 3 months.
And then you came back?
Came back. That was 1997, really. And that's kind of when career probably started, in its very early days.
So you walked into a recruitment company, and then tell us what happened then.
Yeah, I walked into a really well-known high street agency, Brook Street. I went in there for operation temp jobs, just to get some money in my pocket. Mm. Got offered two or three jobs pretty quick. And actually the owner there said, hey, look, you know, we really like you. Why don't you come and work as a recruitment consultant? So, you know, my decision was based again on what was the most well-paid job.
Yeah.
It was a small salary, but I had commission, and something appealed to me about it. And that's when I took the job and started my career in recruitment. So it was definitely a change, and it was one that it kind of honed in more of my skills, actually, that I learned as a kid. It was, you know, meeting and talking to people. I always loved selling, loved sales.
Yeah.
And I was actually willing to pick up the phone to try and bring in new business that actually gave me an edge. And I really quickly realized that was a differentiator to me, that I was willing to pick up the phone and work harder and longer hours than other people.
Surprisingly, that's something that people really dislike. They say that the biggest fear in humans is to speak on a public stage. And it's even a bigger fear than death.
That's crazy.
And picking up the phone and doing sort of cold calling and sales is just as scary to many, many people. So if you have got the ability to do it and are willing to sort of step out of your comfort zone to do it, because as we know, it's not really that scary when you do it.
And
if you're willing to do that, you do stand apart, don't you?
It does, yeah. And these are open environments, right? But if you have the mindset that, you know, I don't care what someone else thinks about me. And that's a mental change that you have to kind of adopt. Mm-hmm. But when you do that, and if you just commit to 2 days of doing it, even if you put, you know, headset on and blank out the world, you will lose that fear in absolutely no time if you do it enough.
So you started to excel really in recruitment, didn't you? And you did this for a few years working for this recruitment company before then deciding to go and do it yourself. Now, tell us about that decision.
Yeah, so I 3 or 4 years, a couple of different jobs, worked with some really good people, great managers, learned a lot. And it just got to a tipping point, really, where I knew I was good at the job, I was on good money, but I realized that I was making more money for other people. And, you know, I'd brought in those relationships, those clients, and I really felt that I could actually do it myself. And it was a very quick decision, really. It was actually one night a colleague said to me, you know, why don't you do it on your own? And I did. Literally the next morning, I woke up, spoke to my wife. She said, do it. I actually gave my notice in the following day.
Yeah.
I just went. I literally gave, and in recruitment back then, they kind of like, you know, they know what you're going to do. So you're kind of done and dusted straight away. And I had to figure out how to set up a business, how to do it all overnight. So, it was a very quick decision. But you know, sometimes you just got to go for it.
So you did do this, you set this business up, and it was very successful. Now we are going to talk this, the title of this podcast, we could talk to you about a whole different thing. You know, we could have phrased this as, I want to be a recruiter, I want to be a entrepreneur, but we are actually talking about, I want to be a tech entrepreneur. So I want to get onto the tech side. So you set up your own successful recruitment business, and you ran this for a number of years whilst during that time you were sort of looking at developing software for your own business. You then came to a point where, you know, you sort of made a choice to go 100% onto the software side. So can you just tell us about that sort of decision-making process, what happened with the recruitment business that you built, and how you then got, you know, much more involved in the software side?
Yeah. Again, the software side came about more of a need, really. So I needed some software in my business, the recruitment company. We wasn't overly impressed with what we saw, but we took something on. And that kind of sparked a conversation up with a good friend who was working for a company, but was pretty good on code. And he said, look, I can help you out. And we slowly started to put together a very basic version of what is today Tracker. So we used it internally, much to the dismay of my recruiters back then, because it was very, very basic. But it gave me the opportunity to start to look at how to diversify my business, really. So the recruitment business was going particularly well. There were some important key players in there who I thought at the time would be able to continue that. Didn't work out in the end.
Yeah.
But in the end, when unfortunately 2008 happened, which was the main recession that I've dealt with, the whole thing fell apart overnight. So hugely successful, very profitable, very much a cash business in that sense. Went from, you know, 300 temporary workers to zero overnight, and I lost the entire business and contract, and 20 staff who I had weren't useful to me anymore, because they weren't willing to pick up the phone and try and bring a new business to be sales. They were account managers. So going back to the point about skill sets and sales, everyone always needs a strong salesperson in an organization to help in the bad times. And it's really important to actually have people who can multitask, right? Yeah. If you're just going to go into a business and say, you know, I'm in sales, but I'm not going to help out with marketing or that admin role, then they're not your A players, you know, they're your C players, and those guys move on. So I realized that I had, unfortunately, a lot of C players in my recruitment business, and I couldn't rebuild it on my own, because my heart was already in another business. So it was a tough time, but I sold and moved fully into software.
A couple of very interesting things to talk about here. The first one is the importance of being open to change and diversification, and always be learning and always being open to doing new things. What you had done is out of necessity, really. You'd built some, well, it's not out of necessity. There were a lot of systems on the market, but you decided that you wanted something bespoke for you. And so you had built this thing, which gave you this vehicle to sort of start to diversify. That's very, enlightened of you, really, because a lot of business owners wouldn't have done that. So we'll talk about that first, the fact that, you know, this then became your sort of, it started off as a little project, and this so often happens to people, something they think is a little sideline ends up becoming, you know, the big thing, the next big thing for them. So I'd always encourage people, if they've got a little interest in a sideline, you know, do pursue that, because you never know where it's going to take you.
That's right, yeah. But also those, you know, if you think about a life cycle of a business, it takes time, right? Yeah. It takes a number of years to get going. So, and what happens is you're not really sort of diversifying on your skill sets either, because you're not being challenged after a certain period of time, because you're doing, a lot of the time you're doing the same things day in, day out. So the software business was like, well, I have no idea. You know, I'm not a coder. That was my business partner. So I had to learn a completely new industry.
Yeah.
Sales was sales, but again, the sales technique was slightly different.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would say, looking back, actually, you know, there is no excuse nowadays for people not to have motivation, because there's, you got the internet, right? You've got everything you need to know at immediately available to you.
Yeah.
So there's no excuses. I mean, I'm trying to think back to 2008, what was available to me as far as a toolkit. And I'm not sure if there was.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much there were. There was people that I could speak to, but not anyone who set up a recruitment software business. So
no.
it was a little bit of a wing and a prayer that it was going to work out.
But it did. You sold the recruitment business, and you started then building this software business into something that you could sell to other recruitment companies, and you started to do that successfully in the UK. But then you took another sort of leap of faith, and there is a theme here. You're certainly not risk averse. Tell us what happened next.
Yeah, again, it, for me, there's a real balance between work and family. And, you know, I've got two kids. The little one, when I was working in the recruitment business, the first couple of years, I didn't really see him that much. So if he's listening, sorry about that. You know, it was one of those ones that, you know, life was good. You know, we was in the good part of town. We moved to Buckinghamshire. Life was good. Wife was happy. So things were working really well. But, you know, I've always kind of pined for sunshine. You know, we kind of pined for something a little bit different. And it was 2014 where, you know, again, we had the conversation with my wife. It was Christmas. My family from America in town. And I said, you know what? Next summer we're going to come out, and I'm going to see if we can sell it in the US. So,
we was all up for it.
We had a 6 week process. We took a 3 month visa, and we went out, hired a house for 6 weeks. What happened was is that I went out, but I went straight to work. So went straight day one, set up shop inside the house, got a little small office, and started to pick up the phone. And actually, in a couple of weeks, we did a deal. And then the following week, I did another deal, and that kind of proved to me the concept that we could sell the business over here. And then I realized, you know, shoot, I can't support these people when I get back to the UK.
Yeah.
So after 3 out of the 6 weeks, we went to see a lawyer. That lawyer says, you should be okay to get it. Whatever you do, don't do anything drastic. Don't sell your house, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, I knew that in 3 weeks' time, we were going home. And what would happen was we'd get back into that lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it would be hard to get the kids out of private school and all that sort of good life that we had. So on week four in the US, we actually put a house up for sale in the UK.
Yeah.
The family took care of that. They did me a big favor, sold the cars, sold the house, went sold really quick, actually far too quick. So there's a whole process. Our house got packed up without us being there. And what happened was the whole house got shipped to the US.
So what we're going to talk about now is sort of a bit more about, you know, the current time and what it's like to be a tech entrepreneur. What I've already picked up is that you can be one of those in San Diego, California, beautiful, sunny California, and not be particularly techie by the sounds of it. But then, you know, you may put me straight and say you are now. Tell us how much of your time is spent on tech versus sales and, you know, what sort of typical sort of day is for you really doing this type of job now.
Yeah, so I mean, a real consideration is that for anyone who wants to be a tech entrepreneur, learn to code. Yeah, definitely one of those ones from my side is a disadvantage. Luckily, I've got a business partner where our strengths actually play off particularly well. He's definitely more of the coding guy, and I'm very much support and sales. So that was a great partnership. You may be lucky enough to have that situation, but if you want to be into tech, start coding, right?
Yeah.
If you're 14, 15, 16, you know, get on with it, right? There's so many self-taught courses out there that can give you basic language skills and, you know, start coding. But, you know, a typical day for me has changed a lot. I'm trying to be more visionary. Before, it was very much I would do sales, I would do support and so forth, and I was still the CEO. So at different cycles of a CEO, it changes. When you start out, you're very much hands-on and you're doing the job of three people. If you want to be a CEO of a startup business, you need to be three people. Being one person is not enough. You're going to have to work as hard as three people. So you are selling, you're supporting, you're talking to tech. So that changes over the course of time. So at 6 o'clock, I wake up in the sense I have a cup of tea. I'll then speak to the UK and see what's going on there, make sure there's any things that we need to know for when I arrive in the US office. And then I'm in the office at 8 a.m. here. So then my day really begins, really. So I will make sure that part of my vision is on a Sunday night, what we're going to do for the week and the month. Yeah. And it's trying to execute that by talking to the guys to make sure they're on track for what they need to do. So not so much the doer on the hands-on approach to picking up the phone for sales anymore or supporting the end customer. It's making sure that all of our goals are being achieved and I can support the guys on a day-to-day basis what they need to be successful.
And then how long are you at work? When do you sort of leave the office, or are you out and about at meetings? And what's it like living in that sort of environment?
Well, it's very different in the US. So in the UK, I'd be out with clients all the time, but geographically it's such a big country. Yeah. So unless you are jumping on planes all the time, it's a cost, and is it an exercise that is worth it? So obviously I jump on planes to see key clients and so forth. We try to attend as many networking events as possible. Right. If you're going to be a CEO, you need to be comfortable in situations where you go to people to meet people new all the time. And you should be doing that at a young age.
It sounds like you have a pretty nice time there, but what would you say your main challenge is in this particular environment?
Yeah, well, again, I think it changes as the business gets bigger. As a startup business, if you're not willing to take risks, you need to realize that your job is not just to provide for your family, but it's also to actually provide payroll to your guys. So cash flow is always tough. So you've really got to be someone who's aware that sometimes you've got to take away a little bit from this budget to make sure the guys are getting paid. And that's a real big stress as you grow a company.
What would be your advice to somebody who wants to get involved on the tech side, and particularly to start their own software business? You've mentioned to get involved in coding, and that there's lots of self-taught opportunities on Google. Is there anything else that you would suggest?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things you need to kind of consider. You've got to have patience. You've also got to surround yourself with the right people. So if you are surrounding yourself with, the ones who are not ambitious, potentially losers, you've got to cut them. You've got to be surrounded with people who are not, laughing behind your back or not backing you up. It's very important to surround yourself by the right people. And even if you're not even getting that from your parents, find a network to support you. And there's no reason to not be able to find that anymore either. It's very accessible. You've even just got to go onto Instagram for inspirational people to watch videos, right? There's plenty of people out there to support that. So I think really surrounding yourself with the right people, definitely coding. Having a sense of business is going to be really important as well. So some sort of, if you haven't got a business degree or if you haven't got a business background, again, YouTube it, right? Top 10 tips, start with the basics, right? Start with being the best salesperson you can be, because that's going to be the first starting point, right? You're going to have to sell the product, okay? Maybe even before that, learn a little bit about marketing, because typically you've got to market before you can sell. Yeah. And really kind of know what you stand for. It's a bit of a cliche, but how you make your money is really just as important as how much you make, right? Yeah. Because it's very easy to go out there and do a job that is, you can make money, but you might not like yourself in the morning. So I wake up pretty pumped that I'm doing something that I enjoy. I would say the most biggest driver in all of this goes back to, you've really got to be willing to work hard, because if you're not, you're going to be a C player. Go and work for a bigger company, because the small businesses aren't going to be interested in you.
Would you say when someone's starting, obviously alongside sort of building their network of positive people, coding, etc., would you say before they jump in and start their own business that it is preferable for them to actually sort of, go and work for somebody else and get a job elsewhere? And
yeah, great question. I mean, I've learned the hard way. I failed as a CEO from a recruitment business in the sense of decisions that I've made. I've made a ton of bad decisions as a CEO in the software business. Mm-hmm. I only think that now, actually, with the experience I've got, I'm getting better. I'm not perfect, but you know, if you want to own a, if you want to run a coffee shop, right, go and work at Starbucks, right? Yeah. Learn how to make coffee, learn how to be in front of customers. You've got to learn your trade. So yeah, go and find a place that allows you to wear many hats. And also, you know, the other thing I'll say is go and work for free. You're not going to get these jobs unless you work for free nowadays, because actually they're going to give it to the guys who have got work experience. So start early. If you're 14, 15, find out a dad of a friend who's got a business and go and do 2 months work experience and beg and plead for your expenses to be paid.
And one final question, David, for people that I'm sure there are people listening now thinking, wow, you know, they would love to go and work in California or somewhere else in the States. How easy or difficult is it to get a visa and to go over and do that?
It's not easy. My path was a little bit different because I was an owner. If you're an employee and you really want to come to the States, then you are looking at a company of decent revenue in the UK for a start, tech, and they need to have an office, obviously, in the US. So do your research before you apply. You know, do they have offices in places that you want to work for a start? If that's your dream, and you're not going to start your own business, right, then you're going to have to align with a company that has offices in the locations you want.
David, it's been so helpful. What you said, if anyone has got any further questions, where's the best place for them to sort of reach you, you know, watch your journey, contact you? Where would you prefer them to contact you?
I would say probably on my Instagram account. That'd be great. It's the.journey.up. You can DM me on there. I'll definitely give you some advice. And happy to help. But anytime.
Thank you so much. And again, thanks so much for getting up at crack of dawn to actually speak to us.
Hi there. If you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, you can get more of the same no matter where you are in your career. If you're looking for your first job, there's my book, How to Get Your First Job and Build the Career You Want, available on Amazon. Or if you prefer face-to-face, my company Middleton Murray provides courses to prep you for your new career and then place you into a job. Alternatively, if you prefer online, try my online program, Your Body Means Business, which is more holistic and provides a complete blueprint on how to advance your career, whether you're employed or running your own business, by upgrading your physical and mental fitness and following a complete business blueprint guaranteed for success. That program, I think, is my best yet. So in summary, no matter where you are in your career, starting out, starting again, or just wanting more, we can help. Follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, where I post daily at Angela Middleton. And subscribe to this channel, as well as my Limitless vlog on YouTube, where you'll see weekly vlogs full of hints and tips for enhanced careers performance. Oh, and share this with your friends as well, if you think it will help them. Thanks so much for listening.